all of these mechanisms work toward our benefit in an environment in which we're told the truth. Unfortunately, in our environment, there's a lot of crap that we learn along with the truths of how to survive, because that's what we're programmed to do. And so that belief goes into us deeply, and it's at the root of our sense of who we are, our beliefs about ourselves. That's what makes up our personality.
Welcome and our sense of self. Happy,
and so we take everything in, all of that indoctrination. And then in the midst of it, we're also making up our own minds about things. So there are self-conclusion beliefs, there's indoctrinated beliefs, and then there's the beliefs that just drift in with culture and religion and history.
I have studied success at all levels. And after spending over a decade working in the field of human development and flourishing, I can tell you with certainty, success leaves clues. On this show, I investigate and explore the common clues and foundational principles that tie together success in all areas of life. Whether it's happiness, health, wealth, relationships, it's all a part of the human experience. By following these success clues and understanding the underlying success principles, you will find that success is not simply a possibility, it's guaranteed. Every Tuesday, I give you simple, straightforward action steps and tools using these clues and principles of success to help you become the happiest, healthiest human you can be. Lyon Goodman is a transformational coach, author, healer, and teacher. At the age of 26, Lyon was shot in the head 4 times. This near-death experience kickstarted 5 decades of research into the nature of consciousness, developmental psychology, spirituality, and healing. He created the Clear Beliefs Method, a trauma-informed therapeutic coaching technique which takes a multidimensional approach to create rapid, deep healing, and he has taught this technique to more than 500 coaches, healers, and therapists around the world. On this episode, Lyon explains his success clues around breaking away from limiting beliefs, understanding the truth, and his multidimensional approach to trauma healing. And he explains why they call him the subconscious pattern detective. So please enjoy this conversation with Lyon Goodman. What is infrastructure of the mind?
That's my favorite question. So we all know that neurons are the infrastructure of the brain. But what is the infrastructure of the mind? The mind is different than the brain. They're clearly related to each other. They're integrated with each other. But the mind has a different infrastructure. And from my perspective, and after my 45 years of research and development and practice, I've come to the conclusion that beliefs are the infrastructure of the mind. Now, most people, when you use the word beliefs, they think of a mental construct, like, I believe in less government, or I believe in Santa Claus, or I believe I'll have another beer. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about experiential conclusions, because even an infant can come to these experiential conclusions before they have language, before they have mental apparatus. A baby who's cries and makes a fuss and gets cared for because mom comes in and takes care of them will eventually figure out that if I cry and make a fuss, I'll get my needs cared for. And that's a good belief for a baby. Unfortunately, we both know one or two people who are adults who are still using that way of getting attention, right? So beliefs are the infrastructure of the human mind.
I think it's an interesting distinction between the brain and the mind, the brain being the physical construct of the spongy thing we think of when we picture a brain, but the mind being our consciousness, our awareness, our thoughts, and everything else that kind of makes us us. And you mentioned that a lot of that is something that maybe once served us. As you said, as a baby, it was good to make a lot of noise and to fuss until we got fed. But the stuff that was imprinted in us when we were young often stays with us when we're older. And that is at the source of a lot of our discomfort or a lot of the negative thoughts, beliefs, habits, things that we have inside of us. So how do we start to clear out some of that clutter that's in our attic, so to speak.
Many people have said that, you know, you're on record mode for the first 4 to 6 years of life. You're just taking everything in. And this is a very smart evolutionary move that we learn from whatever's around us, how to, and we use that those patterns that we identify in order to survive. So language acquisition is one of those mechanisms where we want to communicate with other people. It's not very effective to cry and make a fuss all the time. So you learn how to use words to describe your feelings and to get what you want. It's all based on the brain mind's need to survive. And so this pattern identification system is at work from the very beginning. And one of the early programs that comes with the system is we believe our betters and elders, because if we do believe them, not only will they like us more because we're going to be like them, but we will survive. You know, if you're walking through the forest and an elder says, don't eat that mushroom, it'll kill you, and you believe them, you will survive. And if you don't believe them and you eat the mushroom anyway, you won't have much of a chance of having progeny. So it makes sense that over a long period of evolution, we learned to believe what we were told because that ensured our survival. It also ensured our belonging because when we believe what the group believes, we belong to the group. And as social animals like monkeys and apes, we have to belong in order to survive. A monkey pushed out of the troop is going to be dead meat very quickly. So all of these mechanisms work toward our benefit in an environment in which we're told the truth about things. But unfortunately, in our environment, there's a lot of crap that we learn along with the truths of how to survive. So when your father looks at you and says, you're a piece of crap and you don't belong to, you don't deserve to live here or be fed, we take that as a truth because that's what we're programmed to do. And so that belief goes into us deeply, and it's at the root of our sense of who we are, our beliefs about ourselves. That's what makes up our personality and our sense of self. And so we get programming first from our parents. They tell you who you are and what you should believe and what to do, what's good, what's not good, what's right, what's wrong. And then our siblings get in on the act, and they tell us what's true. And then we go to school and our teachers tell us what's true. And then our religious leaders tell us what's true. And the media tells us what's true. And our friends tells us what's true. And so we don't have the discernment as young people. And so we take everything in, all of that indoctrination. And then in the midst of it, we're also making up our own minds about things. Like, I don't want to be anything like my father, so I'm going to do the opposite of what he does. Or I want to be just like my mom, so I'm going to do everything she does. So there's self-conclusion beliefs, there's indoctrinated beliefs, and then there's the beliefs that just drift in with culture and religion and history. So it's a complex mess of beliefs. We have tens of thousands of beliefs by the time we're young adults. And many of them are neutral. They don't really disturb us one way or the other. Some are positive. And a lot of them are negative. And it's the negative ones that are the problem. They create the problems in our lives. And those are the ones that we focus on clearing out of the way.
I love that breakdown of why this stuff is bred into us. I'm very big on the concept of evolution and social sciences and all of this stuff served a purpose for millions of years of evolution. All of this stuff serves a purpose up until a certain point of our lives. So this is not a you or me problem. This is always why I say human is in the name of this podcast, because this is a human thing. And my question is, you mentioned, okay, your dad tells you this is true. You hear from your teachers, this is true. You hear from society, this is true. What makes something true? Like, if I'm told it enough times, isn't that just the truth?
Well, this is a very good philosophical question that's been asked for thousands of years, all the way back to the ancient Greeks philosophers, who I'm big fans of. I think they were very smart people. Let's take a more practical approach. It's like, what truths are useful? What beliefs are useful? What beliefs create a good life? What beliefs create a not so good life? And then we're sorting differently. We're not sorting for what's true, because we could say that what's true is what's generally accepted as true, but you can always find exceptions to that rule, right? And what's true here in the United States is not going to be true in South America. So if we just take the whole truth question and toss it out, say it's not a useful question, then we can ask a more useful question, which is, what belief do I want to have that will create the results in the life that I want to have? What belief do I prefer to have, since we could say it's all beliefs all the way down, right? It's all beliefs. And all beliefs are limiting, by the way. We talked about limiting beliefs, and there are empowering beliefs, but all beliefs take the whole universe and jam it into a little box. And so it can only be partially true, if it's true at all. And so we have to sort through our beliefs to find out which ones are empowering. Like, if you believe I can accomplish anything I set my mind to, that's a really good belief that keeps you resilient, it keeps you going. It doesn't allow you to quit. And you can handle the issues and the problems of life as they come up. But if you believe I'll never be able to play the piano, then guess what? You won't study and you won't practice the piano. And so you will prove that that belief is true, because it takes study and practice to learn any skill. And so if you believe I can study and practice and learn to play piano pretty well, that's what will happen. It will open that new possibility for you. So beliefs can open possibilities or close off possibilities. So then the question is, what do you want to believe?
I think that's hugely powerful, throwing away what is true and instead asking, you know, what is useful, or what do I want to believe? What would serve me the most? All of these questions, I think, are much, much more useful. And when we ask questions that way, it puts us in a sense of, or in a position of control. Whereas if we're looking at things as if they are objective truths, it's like, well, it just is this way, and I'm no longer in control. I'm just bad at piano, like you said. So that takes me out of the driver's seat. But when we can start to see that there really are no objective truths, or very, very few of them, much less than we tend to think there are in our day-to-day life, we can then take the position that you've just supposed, which is that, like, okay, I get to decide what's true. I get to choose what to believe. And as I'm hearing you go through that, that sounds amazing. It's like, well, I get to just choose what I want to be. So why do we push back so hard against that if it's as simple as, like, I get to choose, and by choosing, I can make my life better?
One of the deepest instincts we have is to belong. I mentioned that before, but belonging is our survival. And if I'm being raised in a family, or if I'm in a community in which they believe something and I believe something different, if I start spouting about what I think is different, I'm going to be pushed out of that community. I'm going to be ostracized or killed or tarred and feathered or hung up on a cross. So we have the instinct to not question the group that we're part of, because we know that we will be tossed out. And being tossed out of a troop means you're going to be dead. So the survival instinct would rather belong and believe something that's not true than it would to question what's not true and be tossed out.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it speaks to how deep these DNA programmings that are inside of us go. This is as much of a part of us as a heartbeat. And it's something that you can consciously be aware of, and still your body will fight back against you. My girlfriend was raised very religious and, like, very Southern kind of, like, I don't know, you know, you get what I mean. That's Southern, yes. Christian kind of, like, very, like, close to a cult kind of church. And we'll be talking about things about, you know, things around sexual shame and guilt and being a woman and things she was taught. And now as an adult, like, she'll talk about it and she'll say, like, I know that that's not true, but it's still, like, inside me. Like, my, I get a gut reaction and I pull away when I even, like, try to go against it. So it's been so deeply ingrained in her that, like, even logically, her conscious mind can be aware of, like, that's factually untrue. And yet that deep need inside her, like you said, to be not cast out of the tribe, because to be cast out of the tribe is akin to death in all mammalian brains, is so deeply held in her that like it doesn't matter what she consciously knows. And a lot of this, then people will talk about, the next word that often comes up is trauma, is what that sounds like to me. And I know that that's something that you work with a lot with your coaching and your clients and your newest book, I believe. So what does it mean to start to transform your trauma?
If you don't mind, I'd like to take a step back to another point you made. Is that okay? And then we'll come back to trauma. There's a lot of people who talk about changing your beliefs, and there's a lot of techniques for changing your beliefs. Most of them are ineffective, or they're partial or temporary. And there's a reason for this. And this ties into your girlfriend and the deep programming she got. Our beliefs come from our experience, whether it's the experience of listening to mom or dad say something to you, or the experience of being shamed in school and laughed at, or the experience of just coming to your own conclusion based on your experience. Like, you know, I'm being beaten by my father, therefore there must be something really wrong and bad about me. Okay. So all of these are multidimensional experiences. They involve our sight, our smell, our hearing, our feelings, our spiritual body, our mental body. We have many different dimensions to us as human beings. And so our experience is multidimensional. And since our beliefs are made of our experiences, they must be multidimensional too. And most techniques that approach belief change are one-dimensional, maybe two-dimensional. Like, here, beat on this pillow and you'll feel better. Well, that clears the emotional charge that you're carrying around, but it doesn't tap the subconscious memory system. It doesn't necessarily change the mental structure, or it doesn't change the embodied sense of that belief. Or you can come to the conclusion, like your girlfriend, like, I know that isn't true. That's a mental awareness, but it doesn't touch the emotional body. It doesn't touch the memory system that remembers physically what it feels like to be ostracized, right? So that's where I came up with the Clear Beliefs method, was by recognizing that in order to clear a multidimensional construct, like a belief, it has to be cleared multidimensionally. It has to be cleared from all of the systems, mental, physical, intellectual, spiritual, energetic, relational. And when you clear it that way, then it's really gone and it doesn't come back. All these other technologies, which are mental alone or emotional alone or mental emotional, but they're not, you know, they don't deal with the memory system, they don't clear it completely. And so the answer is, well, just keep doing it over and over again. Just keep saying your affirmations over and over again, and eventually it'll take, but it doesn't. Because our old beliefs, as soon as you challenge them, they come up, they jump up and reassert themselves. When you say, you know, I'm going to stop eating chocolate, that's a commitment, a mental commitment to your health. But then you're walking around and you open the refrigerator and you suddenly find yourself, you know, finishing off a pint of chocolate ice cream. So the deep programming of chocolate good, chocolate tasty, chocolate yummy, that goes a lot deeper than any mental construct. And so that's the important point that was my breakthrough. And this is what I teach now, is how to multidimensionally clear the multidimensional beliefs that are running our lives. And when you do that, that's when things open up. Because otherwise, when you say an affirmation, I've got plenty of money, the old affirmations go, come on, you don't have plenty of money. Look in your wallet. Your bank account is empty. Don't even joke about this, right? So by clearing, it's like creating a garden in your backyard. The first thing you do is you clear the rocks and the weeds from the soil. Because if you throw your seeds, your new seeds, on rocky, weedy ground, not much is going to grow. But if you clear the soil and you mend the soil and you turn over the soil and there's nothing there to interfere with it, then when you plant a seed, it can grow and blossom. And so in all of our technologies, we are clearing the belief first, and then we decide what we want to believe, and then we plant it in open, clear ground, and there's nothing to interfere with it. There's no resistance to it, and that way it can manifest. So that's the foundation of this work, and now we can get back to trauma if you'd like.
I do really appreciate you explaining that. And I think that that's incredibly, I've never thought about it that way, multidimensional aspect of things, but it makes complete sense because so much of what we experience, it's, you know, a smell can bring you back to exactly where you were when you were enjoying a chocolate ice cream on the beach with your family, or when your dad was beating you, or when your parents were arguing and you were hiding in the kitchen eating a bar of chocolate, or again, a sound or a touch or anything like this. So to just look at things through one thing of just like, it's just a thought, that's not quite true. Our body remembers things in different ways and stores things in different ways. So I think that's a really enlightening way to start looking at things. But yeah, I would love for you to now that we're up to trauma to start breaking down how you look at that as well as how that layers into all of this.
Good. Well, we know a lot more about trauma now than we did 20 or 40 years ago. And it's clear that there's all kinds of trauma. Most of the time people think, oh, you know, beaten severely, that's trauma, or being in a car accident, a car wreck, and your body tossed around, that's trauma. But there's also developmental trauma. For example, if a child is not cared for in many of the ways that a child cannot be cared for, they don't develop properly because a child needs care, needs touch, needs understanding, needs nurturing, needs being seen and being heard. And so if any of those pieces are missing, then the child develops a kind of trauma called developmental trauma, where they're not whole. They're not moving through life whole and complete. There's something missing. Adoption trauma is another one that comes up. Anybody who's adopted went from being inside of a mother for 9 months to being outside and then left, which is abandonment trauma. And even if they're handed to adoptive parents who love them and take care of them and raise them beautifully, that core trauma is still there of being rejected, of being abandoned. So there's a wide range of trauma, and trauma causes us to try to explain it to ourselves. Why am I being beaten? The mind wants to understand the reason for things. And so a child who's being beaten will come to a conclusion that I'm a terrible person. I'm bad. I'm a sinner. I'm worthless. Because trauma is not explainable, really. Now, if you're in an accident, people still wonder, why did I get in that accident? Why was I there in the first place? They have all these kinds of questions, but we know shit happens, right? It's a complex world. Stuff happens. And so, you know, as adults, we can kind of handle that not knowing, but a child needs to know and understand why something happened to them. And so they will come to a conclusion. And the conclusion is usually about themselves. Children don't have the mental capacity yet to say, wow, mom and dad are really screwed up. They should have taken parenting 101 in high school, but they didn't do that. They should not have gotten married at the age of 18 and 19. They should not have had children until they were 30. They are messed up. They need therapy. I'm fine. It's their problem. Children don't have that capacity, even though all that might be true. So children tend to make it about themselves because mother and dad are God and goddess who created me, therefore they must be perfect. And so this is just a trick that the mind plays to explain things. You know, we're storytelling animals. We have narratives that explain life to ourselves. And so that's part of the belief structure as well.
Yeah, I think that the understanding that, as you just said there at the end, storytelling animals is what we are. And we're always looking for meaning in what is, again, objectively a meaningless existence. And I think that causes a lot of disconnect and disparity. We are trying to bring order to the chaos. Everything has to have a reason to our brain, but the reality is nothing happens for a reason, and the universe is chaos, and everything is just random most of the time, right? Obviously, there's exceptions to every rule. You know, you mentioned belief patterns, and I love the analogy that you used of cleaning out the rocks and the weeds of our garden before we start to plant the positive, right? Plant the positive, the mantras, the affirmations. That's where everyone goes, the vision boards, the this and that. But if you're planting that in a garden that's full of weeds, it's all the weeds we know overtake everything else. So how do you start to notice these limiting beliefs so that you can weed them out. Because I think that most people don't realize that this stuff is happening. It's just, again, it's the truth. It's not a limiting belief. It's just the way things are. So how can we start to observe this stuff so that we even have a chance to start clearing out our garden?
In both of my eBooks, Clear Your Beliefs and Clear Your Client's Limiting Beliefs, there's an exercise called Belief Self-Diagnosis. And it's a simple exercise, and you don't need the ebook to do it. You take out a piece of paper, and you think about an area of your life that you have issues with or problems in. Let's say it's money and finances. So you ask the question of yourself, what's something I believe about money? And you listen to your mind, because your mind will answer that question. And what you hear is, money doesn't grow on trees. Great. So you write down, money doesn't grow on trees. That's one of the beliefs you have about money. Then you ask the question, what's something else I believe about money? Money is hard to get. I write that down. Money is hard to get. What's another belief I have about money? You have to work really hard to make money. And so I write that down. And you do that for about an hour. And you have this long list of beliefs that you've accumulated in your lifetime, because we have tens of thousands of beliefs about everything in life. And you can then see objectively what your beliefs are. Some are positive, like I can make money if I get a good job. All right, that's a good belief to have. But some of them are interfering, like I have to work really hard to make any money at all, and even then it's difficult, right? That's an interfering belief. And that's one that you can start working to clear. So then the invitation is clear them with the Clear Beliefs method. That's my particular methodology, but there's lots of other methods for clearing beliefs as well. None of them work as well as mine, but they all work partially. So I endorse anything that works. You know, if something works for you, great. You know, and if it doesn't, you know, come to me. But that's the first step. Is becoming aware of the subconscious beliefs and bringing them up to the conscious level.
Of the same boat, I think I believe in. I'm agnostic in terms of the way to get there. Listeners know, I was a personal trainer for a long time. And in the fitness world, it can be very dogmatic. It's this way or that way. It's CrossFit, it's lifting, it's yoga, it's whatever. And it's like whatever has you feeling better, that's what's amazing. And so I think it's the same thing with this. If it's cognitive behavioral therapy, if it's regular therapy, if it's rapid eye movement desensitization or whatever the thing is, everything works for someone. And I think that's an important thing just for people listening, that there is no specific thing that you can know for sure will work for everyone, because everyone, there's always outliers. But there is something that will work for you. No one is a lost cause. Again, that is a limiting belief that we probably have, is that like it works for everyone else, but it wouldn't work for me. And so I just offer that to people as a different story, as a different narrative. And as you said, Lion, the awareness is that first step, because I say often on here, you know, you can't solve a problem that you didn't know exists. So when it comes to limiting beliefs, the rocks in your garden, the weeds in your garden, when you don't even know that they're there, it's very hard for you to ever get out of that situation. And that's, I think, why we become frustrated, because that's what gets us stuck in these patterns where it's like we keep bumping up into the same thing over and over and over. So, you know, obviously people, again, can go and download your eBooks and reach out to you. But if you could just, if awareness is the first step, we write down, we find some of these limiting beliefs, what's the next step to start to unwind some of this so we can get out of those patterns where we've been stuck in the same place for sometimes years?
I believe that everything has a cause, and every whatever is manifesting in your life has a cause. And there's usually an original cause or many original causes. I'd love to tell you a story, if I may. A client came to me. He was a multimillionaire. And the reason he was a multimillionaire is because he'd make millions, then he'd lose millions. So he'd make millions and he'd lose millions over and over again. And he was tired of the pattern. And they call me the subconscious pattern detective. So he found out about me and he came and said, all right, help me out with this. You know, I've tried everything and I haven't figured out why this is happening. So in a few sessions, I brought him back to a memory he didn't remember having, but I helped him remember an incident in which he was walking down the streets of New York with his mom hand in hand, about age 3, and he looked down and he saw a shiny penny on the ground. And he got very excited, and he reached down for the penny, and his mother jerked him back and said, "Don't touch that, it's dirty." And he suddenly realized that the reason that he couldn't hold on to his money is because mom said it was dirty and he shouldn't touch it. Now, that's the originating point, the originating experience that set up a pattern. And even though he became fabulously good at making money, he couldn't hold on to it for that reason. He had to let it slip through his fingers over and over again, because otherwise mom would be mad, right? So there's that kind of experience somewhere deep in our subconscious mind. And so for anyone listening, if you want to do this work yourself, you can. First of all, feel the belief, feel what it feels like to hold the belief that you're struggling with. And then kind of go back in your memory and see if you can find the first time you felt that way. It's not a mental process, it's a feeling process, somatic feeling in your body. What was the first time you felt that experience? You had that experience, whether it was a pain in your shoulder or an upset stomach or a heartburn or heart hardening or squinching. You know, so whatever that is, follow that back in time to the earliest time you can remember feeling that way, and then explore that experience and see what happened that created it. And you'll probably find the source of that conclusion, of that belief, of that behavior, of that strategy way back there in memory. So there's the secret sauce of the Clear Beliefs Method.
That's beautiful. And I appreciate you sharing that. And it's always amazing to me, but also makes perfect sense to hear stories like that of something that seems so tiny, negligible, pointless in the grand scheme of someone's life, like not picking up a penny, and yet something from when you were 4 or 5 years old can be the rock that starts the entire avalanche that is, again, now 40 years later, someone is stuck in a negative pattern that's destroying their lives. And it speaks to the importance of this type of work, because that's a eureka moment when your client sees that. And without that, you drive yourself crazy thinking like, what's the matter with me? Why something inside me must be broken, or something. We start to tell ourselves stories going back to, we have to give reason to the madness. So that is the real reason, but without that, we start to create these reasons, or just we go crazy. So if you are open to sharing your story of being shot, because that seems to me like something that, when you talk about finding reasons for things and what did I do to deserve this, that seems like the ultimate quote unquote punishment. But I'd love to hear that story and what changed in you after that.
I was 26 years old, and I had graduated with a degree in consciousness studies from the University of Colorado. This is way back in 1975 that I graduated. But nobody was hiring people with degrees in consciousness studies because I was the first one to ever get one. So, because of that, I took a job as a traveling salesman, selling jewelry and gift items to stores. And I was traveling around the Southwest in an RV van. And because I was a nice guy, because I had studied spirituality and psychology and all those things, I'd stop and help people whose cars had broken down. And I was just a nice person on the road. I was a good Samaritan. And I was driving from Las Vegas to L.A. one day, and there was a guy whose car had broken down in the middle of the Mojave Desert. It was about 110 degrees outside. So I stopped and I said, "You know, can I help you?" He said, "Oh, I just put $200 into her and she won't start. I don't know what to do." To shorten the story, we ended up traveling together for 3 days. I kind of took him under my wing. I was, you know, buying him food because he didn't have any money, and giving him some newer looking clothes. I grew to trust him, send him on errands with the van to gas it up or get it washed. And at night we'd camp out somewhere. And so we were east of LA in near a reservoir. I was in the back of the van moving things around to make more room because there was a lot of stuff in the van. And he was in the front of the van listening to music. And suddenly there was an explosion and I felt something hit me in the head. And I thought at first the gas stove had exploded, which was right up to my left. But I looked up and the gas stove was intact. And then I looked all the way to my left, and there I saw him in the front seat with a black gun in his hand pointing at me. And I realized he had shot me. And I was surprised, needless to say, because I had grown to trust this young man. And at first I thought he was warning me and he wanted my stuff. And at that point I went, it's all yours. You can have it all. Leave me naked outside. That's fine. And then he shot again. And I realized he's not warning me. He's going to kill me. And the second bullet missed me by a fraction of an inch. But I realized at that moment, okay, I'm 26 years old and I'm about to die. And I don't want to die with anger. I don't want to die with upset. I want to die in peace. So what do I need to do to create peace in this situation? The first was accepting what was happening. I'm going to die. Okay. What's next? Go through my past and ask for forgiveness from all the people that I had hurt and forgive all those that had hurt me. So I did that. I went through my past like a fast movie reel in reverse, and I got that straight. And then he shot again, and I realized, okay, it's coming close, and I was starting to expand out in space and time, and I was floating above the van, expanded in this state of, you know, out of body, looking down at this van with this little scene going on, which I thought was kind of amusing, and ready to meet my maker. I was talking to God and saying, okay, I'm ready to come home. I didn't expect this, but now's the time. And I was filled with this golden, honey-colored light. And a fourth bullet rang out. And my head was thrown violently to the side. Blood was rushing down. And suddenly I was back in my body. And I didn't understand that because I knew I was supposed to be out of my body. But I was back in my body and blood was everywhere. And somehow I felt intact. I had studied neurophysiology, so I knew that if the bullet had gone through, some things would be missing. And I kept sort of looking around my body because I knew my body very well. And nothing seemed to be missing. And my mind seemed to be intact. So somehow I was intact. And I realized, okay, if I'm going to die, I want to at least look my assassin in the eyes. So I picked up my head, which was bleeding heavily, and I turned to my left and I looked at him. And so I thought, well, if I could talk to him, maybe he wouldn't shoot me again. So I kept trying to talk to him. Well, he was all adrenalated, jumping around with a gun in his hand. And he said, shut up, man, shut up, just shut up. And so eventually he stopped jumping around and I was talking in a very slow voice. And he came up to me and he looked at my head and he said, does it hurt? And at that moment, I realized he went from wanting to kill me to caring about me. And so that began an 8-hour conversation that resulted in us negotiating how to get out of this situation, because he didn't want to go back to jail, which I found out was an issue for him. And I didn't want to die. And so it took us 8 hours to come to the conclusion that we could let each other go. And we made a deal and we shook hands on it. And we parted. That's the short version.
Well, that's wild. It is quite, I mean, a lot of different things there. I don't want to say what's most interesting to me, because it's all an amazing story. And just having been through that, I can't even imagine. But the presence of mind that you had during that time to, like you said, to speak calmly, to negotiate, to, again, in that moment, to think like, okay, I'm going to die, I'm okay with this. It speaks to a lot of the training that you had done before that, your degree and the work, having done the work ahead of time. But, you know, when you look back now on how you lived your life since then, a lot of people have a near-death experience. I had a guest on the podcast a couple of months ago, Dominic Fusco, who had a heart attack at 22 and dropped dead on a track and then was resuscitated and came back. And his life, you know, he said he called it his second chance at life since he got to, he literally died and was brought back. So I'm curious how things changed for you after that interaction and if it altered the course of things going forward.
Yes, it absolutely did. I don't think you can go through an experience like that without it altering your life in significant ways. The first way it altered my life is I said, I don't want to be a traveling salesman anymore. I want to get off the road and get a real job. But I also, because of the near-death experience and being out of body, it recommitted me to learning, who are we as beings? What are we doing here? How does this psychology work? And so I took over 100 workshops and trainings asking those questions. What is the nature of human nature? What is the nature of human motivation? What's the nature of human psychology? And through all of those workshops, trainings, shamanic studies, religious studies, everything I could get my hands on about who we are as beings, I came to my own conclusions and realized that I could help others, that I could be of service. And so after a 25-year career in headhunting, I became a coach and a trainer and created this method of therapeutic coaching that's kind of in between therapy and coaching, because we really are interested in first causes. What is the cause and how can we clear it out of the way so that you can free yourself and awaken to who you really are? Because we have beliefs, but we're not our beliefs. We have a body, but we are not our body. We have thoughts and feelings, but we are not our thoughts and feelings. We're something much more magnificent than any of those things. And who we are really is a multidimensional being in a multidimensional universe with infinite possibilities. And so that's the goal that I have in my work, is to help people remember who they really are.
Yeah, it's always interesting for me to say that something like that, being shot in the head, almost left for dead, could be a positive thing. And yet somehow it led you down the path to where you are today, which is changing the lives of thousands of people, teaching hundreds and hundreds of coaches to then affect how many tens of thousands of lives. And everything had to happen exactly the way it did for it to play out exactly the way it has now. So it's a weird confluence of even the bad things in life, negative in the moment, are still working towards the greater good. And, you know, the fact that you have dedicated your life to helping people in this way, I think speaks volumes to the person you are. And I think it's amazing you're sharing so much good information. So the last question that I have today, Lion, is the same question that I ask every guest, is if you had one action step that you could leave listeners with right here today, as soon as this episode ends, as soon as they take their headphones out of their ears, to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
In simple terms, it's examine your beliefs. If you're not happy with something in your life, examine your beliefs about that thing and about yourself and about your relationship to that thing. If you're unhappy in your relationship, examine your beliefs about relationship and about that person and about yourself. If you're unhappy with your financial situation, examine your beliefs about money and finances and the economy, and look into them, look directly into them and find out what's operating at the subconscious level. And then you can begin to see and connect those beliefs to what you're experiencing. And then you get to decide, do I want to keep living this way? Or do I want to change the beliefs, that infrastructure that causes me to look through them like filters on my eyes? Or do I want to change the filter? Do I want to change from green sunglasses to rose-colored sunglasses and see a different world? And if so, get to work, change your beliefs, and change your reality.
I love that. That's so beautiful. I appreciate that action step so much. So, Lion, before I let you go, I mean, you've dropped so many little gems here already. If people want to get to know you more, learn more about what you're doing, I have links for all of your stuff in the show notes for your website, your book. But where's the best place for people to connect with you?
Best place is liongoodman.com. And that leads to my other websites, clearbeliefs.com, which is my training, and clearyourbeliefs.com, which is my coaching website and our product that helps you clear your own beliefs.
Amazing. And again, I'll have links for that. Anyone listening can just go click that right now and check out what Lion is doing. Lion, thank you so much for being here. I really, really enjoyed this conversation.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or got value from it, you can support the show by sharing it with a friend and giving them the gift of a happier, healthier life. You can also leave a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps boost the show on those platforms so more people can discover it and we can all grow together. I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday morning. And until then, stay happy, stay healthy.